Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
This is Dr. Mike Roizen. You're listening to Part B today, the interview part of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. Thanks for listening. This, I think, is number 858, and we have a special guest for you today. He's Dr. Stephen Mandel, and we're going to talk about a very unusual subject. It actually got from the Cleveland Clinic's innovation group that I had last year, the top 10. It was one of the top 10 innovations in medicine for this year. And Dr. Mandel has been practicing it and leading this field, so I'm really privileged to have him here. It relates to something for treatment, treatment-resistant depression. So, Dr. Mandel, thanks very much for coming on.
Really glad to be here, Dr. Roizen.
Now, you're an anesthesiologist, and you're about 75 years old. Is that right?
Yes, I am. That's correct.
So you survived youthful depression, at least. How did you get involved in this field?
Well, Dr. Roizen, before I went to medical school at USC, I went to graduate school in clinical psychology for 4 years at the University of Cincinnati. I completed everything toward my PhD other than the dissertation itself. And then I went to medical school. I became an anesthesiologist. I loved it, did it well, but continued my interest in clinical psychology, particularly in mood disorders. When in the late 90s, people started observing PTSD patients who were returning from service in war, having anesthesia, many induced with ketamine, were not only having a reasonably good anesthetic, they were having substantial relief of their PTSD symptoms. This was an observational thing reported in the late 90s. Berman did a big paper on it in 2000. I got really excited. This was like, how could this be? An anesthetic causing relief from PTSD? Well, it percolated along very slowly until Carlo Cerati did a demonstration study in 2006, where he actually demonstrated ketamine infusions relieved depression and relieved, although he didn't realize it well at the time, relieved suicidality.
Now,
I got really turned on.
So let me go and break for a second and just ask you some questions. So when I was practicing anesthesia in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and early 00s, ketamine, we worried about it causing hallucinations. So we used to give a benzodiazepine before we gave ketamine. So it was, we worried about that potential. Does it cause... How does this, if you will, psychic effect relate to its use in treatment-resistant depression?
We actually find the psychic effect beneficial. And there are some studies suggesting that hallucinations, or what we're calling hallucinations, actually facilitates the transformation in mood that we're attempting to achieve.
So now ketamine, let's go and just talk a little bit about, one is, I want to talk about a little bit about treatment-resistant depression. Two is what you've done, which has been really amazing in bringing this form of treatment for what was treatment-resistant depression to the forefront and helping people. And then a little bit about how you are spreading this, if you will, promoting this so that other people get the benefit. But let's go and talk. So treatment-resistant depression, what is that? Is that meaning I try to talk through it and I can't talk through it? Or what does that mean?
Well, it's a term of art. Treatment-resistant depression, as it's used typically in psychiatry, and I speak as a non-psychiatrist, but it means... and I use the word advisedly, failure of two or more agents given an adequate dose for an adequate period of time, either due to a these agents to achieve relief or the emergence of side effects that make the continuation of the medication problematic. And this is for SSRIs, SNRIs, atypicals, antipsychotics, mood stabilizers. People who have had adequate trials of two or more of these for 3 or more months without success are TRD, treatment-resistant depression.
And so people have tried this and other techniques, two or more, as you say, and they haven't succeeded. So then how do they get referred to you, an anesthesiologist, for this?
Initially, my writing articles and being available on the internet got me patients. Psychiatry was very resistant and reluctant. I've been doing this for 4 years. I stopped doing anesthesia 4 years ago and started doing this. And much has changed in that time. Among the things, ketamine has become quite widely recognized as the go-to drug for treatment-resistant depression. American psychiatry has done a 180 about face and decided ketamine is okay to use. The position in psychiatry had been that ketamine was a great drug, but needed more study before it could be used clinically.
And so now, where are we in that sequence now?
American psychiatry, as of March 1st, has endorsed ketamine as a treatment for depression and suicidality, although with many caveats and limitations. My community of psychiatrists here in Los Angeles has become very accepting of it and of me, an anesthesiologist, providing treatment for their patients. They know they're not going to lose their patients, and their patients come back much better able to work with them. Many psychiatrists today don't do talking therapy. They do only pharmacotherapy. But for those who are doing talking therapy, the patient comes back having had an experience with ketamine, much better able to make use of the talking therapy, much better able to concentrate, better able to get access to material that had been elusive in the past.
Now, what you're saying is that this seems to be working. There was a, if you will, a resistance to trying it. And to show you how much it's been working, and Steve, I know I'm springing this on you, is, in fact, the Cleveland Clinic voted it as one of the top innovations for this year. So
yes,
we're in fact, there's a lot of feeling that this is helping a substantial number of people. One of the criticisms has been, and you'll have to tell me where this goes because I don't know it, is that, if you will, that people are worried about getting people, other people, that is patients, getting addicted to ketamine. Do people get addicted to ketamine?
Ketamine is not addictive. People don't get addicted to ketamine. That is not to say that some people aren't really, really, really focused on ketamine. There are several communities in the world where there are hundreds of ketamine abusers, if you will. But set and setting are so important. Mindset and setting are so important in determining addiction. None of my patients, and I've had about 700 patients and done over 5,000 infusions, and none of them have become addicted. None of them have shown drug-seeking behavior. This doesn't mean that you can't become dependent upon ketamine the way some people are dependent upon chocolate or ice cream, or they have to have their French fries. But that's not intrinsic in the substance. It's not addictive in the sense that nicotine is addictive or that opiates are addictive.
So
actually,
it
many
is,
patients find it somewhat aversive.
And what are the, now, obviously some of the psychiatrists at the Cleveland Clinic, because they would have nominated it for the for one of the top 10, and we review about 150 innovations every year. So one of them must have nominated it. So people think this is effective, or at least very effective, in this form of treatment-resistant depression. How effective is it?
Well, I'm going to tell you, Dr. Roizen, and the numbers, as you as a physician and a researcher, will be incredulous. But in our clinic, 83% of our patients respond positively.
Now, in the general literature, what you said, if I heard correctly, is over 80% of your patients respond positively.
83. You are correct.
And now, when I was in anesthesia, there was both a racemic ketamine, that is an L and a D, and it was always thought the left-handed group called the S-ketamine, as opposed to the R-ketamine. They're mirror images of themselves, let me explain to the listening audience, that they were somewhat different. Is there a difference between the two types of ketamine, and is that being exploited, or do you use the racemic, or what we call ketamine, in general now?
I use ketamine in general, and that's what's generally available. And there are differences between the two isomers, and those are still being explored. Janssen Pharmaceuticals is attempting to, has gotten fast track approval to study S-ketamine as a mood elevator. And it's their contention, and not yet demonstrated, that S-ketamine will achieve the mood-elevating properties of racemic ketamine without the psychoactive properties, which they regard as an adverse side effect.
More of the You, the Owner's Manual podcast with Dr. Mike Roizen coming up. But first, I want to tell you about Organifi. Organifi is an organic superfood supplement line that makes quality, trusted nutrition convenient and accessible. We all know green juice is good for us, but have any of you tried juicing? Not only does it cost a fortune, especially if you're shopping organic, but it is also very time-consuming. And that's why I opt for Organifi Green Juice, an organic superfood green juice powder that you just add to water and get your greens on the go. It helps me sustain energy all throughout the day. It's quick and easy nutrition on the go. And it's not just any green juice. Remember, it's organic, and I want you to try it out, all right? Go to Organifi.com, and we're going to save you 20% off by using the code YOU, that's Y-O-U, at checkout. Once again, try out Organifi Green Juice for 20% off using code YOU, Y-O-U, at checkout at Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. Now back to Dr. Michael Roizen and the You, the Owner's Manual podcast.
And so both of us were around when this research was being done by Paul White, I think, was one of those who was doing this. Now, how did you get from anesthesiologist in Los Angeles to deciding this is what you wanted to make your life's work? What happened? What was there? Was there a patient? Was there a situation? Or are you just doing this because you're 75 and decided you still need to be creative?
Well, it's all of the above. I continued my interest in clinical psychology even though I was in medicine, not as a practitioner, but as a consumer and an interested reader. Then I had some situations with depression and suicide in my own family. And or at least an untimely death that was hard to explain. And that really sensitized me.
That was a brother?
No, it was, I really don't, it wasn't immediate family, and the family members asked that I not discuss it.
Okay.
So the survivors of the family member have asked that I not discuss it. It's a contention, source of contention.
So there was a severe depression in someone in a family that got you into this field?
Yes.
And the response rate, seeing that, whatever it is, over 80% of people responded, what happened then? How did you, if you will, I mean, that must have been astonishing. What did you decide to do?
I really was astonished. I loved doing anesthesia. Anesthesia is fun, but if you're looking for an outcome measure of anesthesia, the better you do anesthesia, the less time you were ever there. I mean, an anesthesia experience is a little like taking a ferry through perhaps a pretty perilous river. But once the ferry boat captain, the anesthesiologist, has gotten you to the other side, the most he can hope for is that you're unchanged by the experience. When you take a person who is feeling helpless, hopeless, worthless, suicidal, anhedonic, and you can, in a very short time, make them enthusiastic, make them say, oh, the food is tasting better, the music sounds better, a hug feels better. It's transformative. It's very exciting. You've mentioned several times, I'm 75. What am I still doing this? It's really fun to do. It's really so gratifying to see people. When you help someone improve their mood that way, they're very grateful. They're really transformed. So are their children. So is their spouse. So is their employer. So is their church group. So is their all their interaction in the community is enhanced. It's a wonderful thing to do.
So let's say something more. You're practicing in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And although the Cleveland Clinic and a number of other places like Mass General have groups that are now doing this and believe in its efficacy, there is a certain, what we would call, resistance in some people. Tell us about that.
You mean resistance among some practitioners?
Yeah, resistance among some universities, some practitioners, some people feeling this is not a appropriate use, the drug isn't approved for this, etc.
That's true. Ketamine is approved by the FDA, but as you know, approvals are given for a particular purpose, and ketamine is approved for anesthesia. So this is an off-label use. There are many drugs used off-label. In fact, in the United States, a little over 20% of all prescriptions are written for off-label. And in mental health, over 30% of all prescriptions are written off-label. However, American psychiatry, particularly establishment psychiatry, is largely under the influence of big pharma. And the pharmaceutical houses are very unhappy seeing their traditional agents not work nearly as well as an out-of-patent cheap agent. They don't like it. So if they can talk about addiction, if they can make it all kind of racy and sleazy by calling it a club drug, if they can talk about innuendos about neurologic problems or bladder problems, they like that. If they can say, oh, it needs more research. It's a great drug, but needs more research. They can sell a few more SSRIs or SNRIs. I think that's their main focus.
So I want to ask a couple of things. What are the complications from this? And I should tell people, we're talking with Dr. Steven Mandel. He has been practicing anesthesia and a field of treatment-resistant depression. Obviously, he was a 35-year-old practicer, if you will, or practitioner anesthesiologist, board-certified. He has a master's degree in psychology. and has been running the Ketamine Clinics of Los Angeles for this treatment-resistant depression. So he's been doing a lot of innovation in this area. So what are the side effects that people, are there side effects? Obviously there's side effects from everything, but you mentioned they call it a club drug, they call it whatever you call it, bladder something. But you mentioned a couple of things. What are those side effects that people are worried about?
Well, Dr. Reisen, I want to distinguish between the actual side effects and the side effects that the detractors are fond of raising questions about. As a practical matter, ketamine given therapeutically has no adverse long-term side effects. Patients will get nauseated. Probably 10% of them. Patients will feel dizzy afterwards. People will have an unsteady gait. All of these subside within an hour. Ketamine in communities of abuse, of which there are several in the world, does produce damage to kidneys and bladder after about, and we don't know what this is because we don't know the denominator because abusers don't come forward to be counted until they have a problem. But a certain percentage is thought to be somewhere around 15-20% if they use it for more than 5 years. I'm talking daily use of over a gram and a half. Nothing to do with therapeutic. Sorry?
What kind of problem do they have? What damage does it do to the bladder or the kidney?
They have a bladder that's contracted and they have a lot of frequency. It's a lot like interstitial. It's almost indistinguishable from interstitial cystitis.
Now, let's go back. So, but you don't have to give this infusions for over 5 years to get
every day over a gram. I'm giving a tenth of that, six times.
So it requires six infusions, but not a 5 years of infusions.
No. You're correct.
And what you're saying is that there's something in the resetting of the brain. It's almost in a computer analogy. I take it. It's like cleaning or resetting your computer, turning it off and on, and it resets and starts functioning again.
It's exactly right, Doctor.
Dr. Mandel, I want to thank you for helping our listeners and me understand this better. We've been talking with Dr. Stephen Mandel. He is the founder and president of Ketamine Clinics of Los Angeles, a board-certified anesthesiologist, talking about treatment-resistant depression, a relatively severe problem, and a severe problem that psychiatrists and psychologists battle in patients. This has been a success. In fact, the Cleveland Clinic thought of it highly enough that it was considered and is voted one of the top 10 innovations of this year. Dr. Mandel, I want to thank you very much. I'm going to try and get a second session with you talking about creativity after the age of 65. We'll be right back, but that's not what we're going to talk about now. We're going to remember this is 858B. Come back. At maybe at 8:59, I don't know when we'll be doing this and playing this one. We're going to talk about creativity after the age of 65 with Dr. Mandel.